Hello, and welcome to the final episode of our three-part podcast series on the UK care home sector. I'm Peter Preedy, and throughout this series, I've been interviewing members of our expert capital markets and advisory business to get their insight on this very specific part of the living market. Today, I'm joined by Anthony Oldfield, director in the healthcare capital markets team and co-author of our report, which this podcast series supports. We heard from Anthony's fellow author, James, in episode one. And in the first two episodes, we covered the scale of demand for purpose-built care beds and its drivers, in addition to the constraints on supply as smaller dated care homes drop out of the sector just as quickly as newer purpose-built ones are constructed. Which brings me to what we'll be discussing today in our third and final conversation: the how, the where, and the who in relation to the opportunity for further care home development in the UK. So, Anthony, great to see you. Thank you for joining me today to discuss these final talking points. Building on from the themes discussed in our last two episodes, and specifically the need for 10,000 new beds per annum until 2030, let's dive straight in by asking, how can we build more care homes in the UK to meet this demand?
Great to be here, Peter, and to round up the last episode of the series for our listeners. How do we meet this demand? Well, one option we're calling for in the report is for local planning authorities to increase the land allocation towards sites which are targeted to provide accommodation for older people. This bearing in mind that the over 65 population will account for 25% of the total population by 2050. You know, it's absolutely essential that care homes form part of the community infrastructure. At the moment, very little land is allocated for this use, and we think that really needs to change.
And how do you suggest that change takes place?
Well, local authorities need to recognise their local needs and the pressing demand that there is for specialist accommodation for older people. And we're urging them to allocate specific parcels of land to enable these types of development. I mean, that being said, there are signs that some local authorities are, you know, taking more of an interest and making sure this happens. For instance, we're currently acting for the Royal Borough of Kingston-upon-Thames, who have a former care home that was closed, and they have since obtained planning consent for 80 beds, and it's currently under construction. And, you know, that's a good example of what we're talking about in the report in relation to smaller homes being inefficient and dropping out of the market and being replaced by larger purpose-built ones, offering better economies of scale. And it's a good example of a care site being reused and not just sold off for residential development.
Yeah, okay, that's a great example. But surely the responsibility of providing further care home beds doesn't and shouldn't just sit with local authorities.
Yeah, that's true. And there's also a number of other public sector bodies who may be able to assist with land allocation, including, I'm thinking, Homes England, central government departments, and the NHS. I mean, these are all large landholders within the UK and would seem like really good partners for the private and for the not-for-profit care home operators who are looking to develop more accommodation to meet this pressing need.
What is activity like at the moment? I mean, obviously it's been a pretty difficult time for sectors across the property industry in general, but care homes specifically, what was it like pre-COVID and what's going on now?
Yeah, I mean, operators and developers are still buying and building sites, you know, even despite the difficulties that many care home providers have suffered due to the pandemic, and the market's holding up remarkably well. We're currently have an operational care home that we're selling, you know, which went under offer pre-COVID, and despite everything that's happened with the pandemic, the pricing of that has not changed. And we also have a prime leasehold development opportunity in the market, and that received 11 bids, which far exceeded our clients' expectations.
That's brilliant. But as we've learnt in our previous episodes, we know that not enough homes are being built to satisfy future demand. So surely we're not just talking here about the status quo. What's the way forward to ensure that we have enough supply to meet the needs of the population?
Yeah, of course. And I completely agree, Peter, but there needs to be a real gear change in the sector. I mean, this is where we see opportunities for, you know, property developers, for house builders, for private landowners. I mean, demand is strong in this area, and there is an opportunity for those groups to, you know, to allocate part of their sites to care home use. or, you know, perhaps diversify away from other sectors which are contracting, you know, like retail. You know, in order to meet levels of demand, we will need new entrants into the sector who can use their expertise and land opportunities to bring new schemes forward. And I think some property developers will actually be pleasantly surprised at, you know, what care home operators can offer for land in the right location.
And that in itself actually is a really good point, Anthony. What is the right location? Where exactly do these new care homes, new care home developments need to be built?
Yeah, funnily enough, we're often asked that exact question, Peter. And whilst that's not necessarily a right or a wrong answer to this, some of the trends that we're seeing our clients focus on is more towards an urban setting rather than perhaps traditionally care homes being, you know, situated in more rural areas. I guess the, you know, the historic rationale being that older people like to look out on gardens and nice greenery. But actually, you know, getting staff out to these facilities that are more remote in location is difficult. And therefore operators can sometimes end up, you know, relying heavily on agency staff, which is much more expensive. You know, many staff within care homes will be on, you know, the national living wage and therefore be relying on public transport to reach their place of work. So, you know, connectivity is extremely important.
That's a really interesting point about the location, actually, because I would say that most people who don't have first-hand experience, be it professionally or personally, of the sector, would normally consider care homes to be situated in rural or at least suburban areas, certainly not in urban centres.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, care home operators are much keener on acquiring sites in urban settings where often there's much more life and activity for older people to observe. And, you know, they're easier for staff to access. One of the more successful schemes that we visited was located right on top of a railway station, which is really popular, you know, with the residents because they could watch the coming and going and the activity happening throughout the day. And high profile locations are also a key driver for operators. I mean, having a scheme which is, you know, well known in the local area will mean it's self-marketing, and main road locations can also be more convenient for relatives to visit, you know, maybe when they're on their way back home from work.
Okay, so that all makes sense. But given, you know, obviously the last few months, a lot of talk about greenery and outside space and private outside space, do you see the desire to be in urban locations increasing in a post-COVID world?
Yes. In fact, we expect that with the COVID-19 pandemic accelerating a reduction in retail space in the UK, that there will be a number of former retail sites that could be really suitable to provide new care homes. There's a site in Evesham, which we're currently selling on behalf of a client, which is a 2-acre small retail parade with a large car park. And this is likely to be consolidated into a much smaller food-based retail offering and then combined with a new care home. You know, this will provide jobs in the local area and a much better specified retail facility that is more appropriate for the surrounding area and the level of demand. And then, you know, there's also opportunities for care operators to provide more intermediate care.
And by intermediate care, do you mean, is that care aimed at people moving from private accommodation into a care home or into assisted living?
No, I mean, not quite. I mean, intermediate care services actually provide support to help people recover, you know, say from a hospital stay, and then increase their independence. It's often a short-term placement, you know, helping them to get back home.
Okay. Is that a new concept?
Not really. I mean, it's been brought to the fore as the government continues its policy of discharging people from hospitals as quickly as possible. I mean, bearing in mind that 1 in 8 people infected with COVID actually contracted the virus whilst in hospital. And they're looking for settings where people can receive reablement support from professionals such as occupational and physical therapists and care staff. And with the health and social care becoming more integrated in the UK, this should, in theory, become more streamlined. And with most major hospitals being located in urban areas, and therefore, you know, it makes sense that intermediate care options would also be in urban settings. So this is a model that is very well established in Europe, and we expect to see more of this, you know, occurring in the UK in the future, again, accelerated by COVID-19.
Okay, so if more care home operators are looking for sites in urban areas, is this not going to lead to competition with private developers who can generally afford to pay more for the land in question? And also, Anthony, price notwithstanding, how are care home operators expected to find sites of the size that they require in urban areas such as central London, Edinburgh, Manchester?
Yeah, I mean, that's another really good point. I mean, and London is the most undersupplied region in the UK for care home beds per capita of the older population. And, you know, this may be due in part to how competitive it is to acquire sites in the capital. And typically a care home site is 1 to 1.5 acres, you know, if built in isolation. But it's also becoming more common to see care homes that aren't in isolation, but form part of a larger scheme, you know, like the Orions scheme at St John's Wood. You know, this is a mixture of later living and traditional care home beds. So by care homes forming part of these larger schemes, it will definitely help towards meeting that 10,000 bed per annum requirement.
And how do those mixed schemes work in reality?
Yeah, I mean, many of our clients are building later living schemes which have a mixture of accommodation types, you know, like independent living, which is similar to sheltered housing, assisted living and care homes, all within one site. And, you know, if these are in suburban areas, they're often termed retirement villages. And then if they're in more urban settings, maybe later living schemes. But one of the ideas behind it is that operators provide a range of care options. So, you know, the independent living units will have very little care provided, assisted living a bit more, and then, you know, care home beds will have that 24-hour staffing provision. And this is, you know, this is really useful for couples, for example, because it can enable them to stay together, you know, in the same development for longer. So if one of the couple develops, you know, greater care needs than the other, then they can move to another part of the scheme. So, and I visited one example recently where an older gentleman had moved in with his wife into an independent living flat, but as her care needs increased, she moved downstairs into the care home. But it meant that he could visit her every day, but also maintain his independence by keeping his flat in the same block.
That's amazing. I again, you know, for those not necessarily involved in the sector day to day, I had no idea that sort of scheme existed. It sounds like the perfect mix of practicality and sympathetic care, like operators are genuinely considering the humanity of the situation. I think we all look forward to some nice stories like that coming out of developments in the future. Okay, we've talked about demand. We've talked about land opportunities in the context of operators. What opportunities does this present for investors?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and recently we've witnessed significant demand from pension and insurance funds who are very keen on the level of income that these facilities can provide. I mean, they are long-term in nature, and therefore the operators are prepared to sign up to 25, 35-year leases, which is almost unheard of in any of the mainstream property sectors. So, you know, the sector is also very popular with real estate investment trusts. And they'll, you know, we think they'll continue to play a big role in the sector. And a number of large UK landlords and also US and European REITs are investing in the UK. And, you know, the best example of this being in 2019, where we helped Defica, who are a Belgian investor, make their first purchase in the UK. And that was a £450 million acquisition of a 93 care home portfolio. And Defica have already added more homes to the portfolio, and we expect other European REITs will follow because they understand the attractiveness and the dynamics of the UK market and what it has to offer. So, you know, really there's opportunities for operators, landowners and investors in this market, and it will take a combination of all of those different players and a high number of new entrants to hit the 10,000 bed per annum requirement, which our report identifies.
And as we know, for all three of those groups, we know for certain that the target market is only going to increase. Interesting. Anthony, thank you for outlining the how, the who and the where in regards to opportunities within the care home sector. I'm sure our listeners would agree that it's been great to hear about some real life applications about how operators and investors are adapting in the market.
No worries, Peter. Thank you. It's been good to join you.
Thank you. A reminder from me that you'll find in the show notes of this episode a link to our report, which obviously we encourage you to download and read should you not have already done so, and in which you'll find greater detail and statistics to really visualize everything that we've discussed in the series. Thank you also to James and Emma from episodes 1 and 2. And of course, I must also say a huge thank you to you, our listeners, for accompanying us along the way as we've questioned and debated this quite specific subject. We all really hope you found these discussions insightful and informative. If you do have any questions on the topics we've covered, either in the podcast series or in the report itself, obviously please do get in touch with the team for more information. Click the button on the JLL webpage, or if you're listening on Spotify or another podcast provider, you'll find a link in the show notes. Thanks again for listening. Goodbye.